Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 305.
This week on the podcast, the first rule of marching is you show up to the march anyway.
And BuzzFeed publishes their second widely disputed bombshell that we'll probably find out is completely credible in 2 years.
Plus, Trump's deal to end the shutdown is just a worse version of a deal he already reneged on once.
And everybody's running for president, part two.
The only person who can use military aircraft this week is Melania Trump.
And Steve King has finally headed up to here with Steve King.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
So, boy. All right. Well,
happy MLK Day.
Happy MLK Day. It's taken us a while to get to this point here.
That's right. It's Monday.
Yes.
But it's a holiday weekend. So,
that's right.
Like, what were we supposed to give you a podcast on Sunday?
And you had to go to the Women's March.
I had to go to the Women's March. I had to go ride in a swan boat yesterday on Echo Park Lake.
That's exciting. So that's what you did yesterday.
That's what I did yesterday. Me and a friend decided to have a lovely platonic romantic ride together.
I love that.
On the swan boats in Echo Park.
That's fantastic.
And it was very relaxing.
Yeah.
We had our boat made like a bit of a grinding noise, which was a little bit jarring. But it's also a kind of exhausting activity because you have to pedal the whole time.
They're paddle boats. Yeah.
Not paddle, pedal boats.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So it's like taking a spin class. I was sore from it.
Oh my.
But it was still very relaxing and it was very fun. And it was a beautiful day. So it worked out great. But on Saturday I went to the Women's March.
Yes.
And
I didn't.
Brent didn't.
Sadly.
The man kept him in because so many people I know didn't go because they thought it was off or they thought that going said something terrible about them.
Right.
Because the way
said they were anti-Semitic if you went to the Women's March.
You went to the Women's March. Because if you have been following the drama from the Women's March in New York, where the main Women's March was being held.
Right. And I think the DNC has separated themselves like officially from the organization and it's like a whole
First of all, nothing could be more movement politics than
this. Everyone, didn't this start by like one person posting on Facebook or something crazy?
Like the thing is that the Women's March doesn't have a policy agenda. It's just a thing we all do so that we can show up once a year and be like, we have our eyes on you fuckers.
Right.
You know? And so the idea that these leadership struggles happen in every movement.
Of course.
And I think because the Women's March brought a lot of new people into the process, I don't think that people are that experienced with this kind of drama. Like, I once had two anti-war groups in my neighborhood that were warring. And they were both named things that were so long-winded and ridiculous that you couldn't figure out which was which anyway. And I don't know why there were two of them and why they hated each other.
Right.
But, like, this is classic movement politics.
Right. And this is also sort of like it's funny to me that there were two anti-war groups going on. But, I mean, it's also sort of, like, not totally surprising. But also, this is the women's march, which is a broad tent.
It's a very... So broad. No, and this is the kind of thing also that you want to actually be glad it gets worked out in public and not behind closed doors. Because a lot of the time when you have really top-down organizing forces, what will happen is an agreement like this or disagreement like this will come up and the sort of affected parties don't get a chance to participate in the conversation. It's like one self-appointed leader goes into a door with another self-appointed leader and they come out and they're like, we've made up. And you're like, what was the issue
what's the solution?
This is something where, and I think also this happened in part because in New York City in particular, there is like a very sort of strong Jewish activist community.
Right.
And I think, you know, the Women's March on the one hand made some missteps in not including any Jewish leadership in their main organizing structure from the beginning. They almost thought that like Bob Bland would do fine because white ladies are all whatever. But Jewish activism is sort of like its own thing. And so, and understandably, there were a lot of Jewish activists they wanted to distance themselves from because of the anti-BDS bullshit that goes on. And so understandably, it was kind of a complicated thing because they have all of these, you know, the broader left-wing movement is very much concerned about social injustice in the Middle East and specifically Palestinian people being having their lives constantly ruined. Yeah. And so there's and in New York City, because there's a really strong Israel lobby there. And even among the progressive left, there is this weird divide. Like, that's what happened here. This is a New York City problem, mostly. Yeah. And it's because New York City is 25% Jewish. And because of that, this is a really active conversation in progressive circles in New York City. I'm mad that the way it got covered made it seem like people shouldn't show up at their Washington State Women's March because it would say something about them. And also that the way the coverage was framed, if you went to one march, you were supporting women of color, and if you went to the other, you were supporting Jewish women. And it really didn't leave any opportunity for you to support both. And I know a lot of Jewish women who are activists who are also not obsessed with the sort of like with hating the Israel disinvestment movement because they understand that that's a political thing that is separate from their identity as Jewish people. And also that there are real social justice concerns in the Middle East that they want, that they see a little bit more broadly than just through their identity as Jewish people. And so that framing, which really came from the Times did a big story on it, and the framing made it seem like, well, it's one or the other and you can't have both. And that was infuriating to me. And that made a lot of people uncomfortable about participating in the march. Again, this is a march that started because some random person tweeted, we should all show up after the inauguration and just like have our eyes on these assholes. And then we were all like, we should do it. Like, these women are not the Women's March. The Women's March doesn't even have a policy agenda. There's no reason to care what their squabbles are in terms of identity politics within the umbrella. You just show up at the march anyway. Show up at whichever one you want. It doesn't matter because the marches have nothing to do with any of the issues that they were disagreeing about. But I think also the longer that we all are in this situation, the more we'll realize that like this is just how movements work. There's always an organization that splits from the main organization over some squabble that couldn't possibly be important enough to split over and has nothing to do with anything. And that's what being a lefty is like, you guys. That's it. That's who we are. We're those people. We squabble with each other. We nitpick each other. And but I think
this is we're talking about this on MLK Day.
Exactly.
There were many MLK detractors because they, you know, didn't feel like nonviolence was the answer. These movements that grow into real movements have real disagreements, and they're right.
They should have the discussion. This is an important discussion.
You become better because of them.
Yeah. This is a way for us to all educate ourselves about something that is not getting a lot of light, and also is a way for us to figure out how you move forward within a group where you don't agree on everything. Like, what are the constructive ways you work together with people inside of a system where you're not going to agree on everything? Everyone doesn't come from the same background. There's no way for everyone to agree on everything. That's just not how it works. So in any case, my point is, if this happens in the future, just show up at the march anyway. It's like if there's an anti-war march and you're mad that the group that you don't like because, you know, of whatever reason is organizing the march and it's not another group, you still show up at the anti-war march because you're against the war. It doesn't matter who the group is. In any case, moving on. This was an exciting week for drama with BuzzFeed. As you recall, Brent was the one who reminded me that BuzzFeed was who published the Steele dossier. And so BuzzFeed has gotten themselves back in a Steele dossier style situation. Where they've published a kind of exciting report.
Because you'll remember, we talked about that on the podcast. And of course, it was talked about in the news. And that was the one that had like a whole bunch of, you know, scandalous things that was like put together by, I think, like some, you know, British agent
or something.
That
was the Golden Showers one.
The Golden Showers one. And everybody was like, oh my God, this is insane. And there were a lot of other publications that wouldn't print it at the time. And then BuzzFeed did. And then they got raked over the coals. And everybody was like, this is all nonsense. And then now, you know, years later, as we've gone through this Russia investigation and are still in the midst of it, we have seen a lot of that Steele dossier borne out in some type of way.
It's been verified left, right, and center at this point. And this is what we sort of suspect is going to happen with this, too. So what happened is, BuzzFeed published a report with allegations from two federal law enforcement officials that say that Trump personally directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress in 2017 when he was talking to Congress. I think he did it in August and in September, October, whatever, about the Trump-Moscow real estate deal. Basically, Cohen had said that those discussions ended in January of 2016, which was before the official kind of race was on, the presidential race. It turns out that the Mueller team doesn't necessarily think that's true. And so according to the report...
neither does Rudy Giuliani, by the way.
We're going to get to that. But according to the report, Trump supported Cohen's suggestion that he meet with the Russian president, Vladimir Putin, during the 2016 election to sort of help the negotiations move forward. And then Mueller came out with a statement that said that, you know, these BuzzFeed conclusions were not necessarily true.
Right.
But the way that they worded it was weird. And it's also weird that they chose to comment from an ongoing investigation about a news story.
It was rare.
It was really rare. But a spokesperson for Mueller's team said, BuzzFeed's description of specific statements to the special counsel's office and characterization of documents and testimony obtained by this office regarding Michael Cohen's congressional testimony are not accurate. So they're saying Michael Cohen didn't say exactly what they said he said to us.
Right.
And also what they said he said to Congress.
Right. But I think at least part of what that sort of like, you know, quote unquote bombshell was, right, was that also that Trump asked Cohen to be lying in front of Congress.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that, like, I think what we may find out, and this is sort of what you and I were talking about, actually, just before we started this podcast, but is that we're going to see that maybe some of the details weren't necessarily right.
Right.
But that
the conclusions
like,
were.
The conclusions were, and, like, regardless of whether some of the specifics are, that act of requesting that your personal attorney lie in front of Congress, which, A, we know he did.
Right.
And B, we know he's Trump's fixer. So, like, why wouldn't Trump tell him to do that?
That's his whole job is to lie in
front. It's not a leap to get there. And that's obstruction of justice.
Yeah.
So.
And even confirmed.
And also potentially collusion. I mean, if he was actually, you know, meeting with Putin during the 2016 race.
Yeah, but the it's like one of those things, like with so many Trump things, where we can already start from a place of knowing that it's true.
Well, right, exactly.
We know that Trump asked Cohen to lie, because even if he didn't specifically ask Cohen to lie, Cohen's job was to lie for him.
Right, Cohen is a liar, and Trump is a con man, and the two of them were thick as thieves. And
well, and Cohen was working as a fixer for Trump. Yes. Your job is to fix situations like this. So, of course, Trump was like, oh, don't tell them we're still in negotiations about the Trump-Moscow deal, and certainly don't tell them that I, like, want to meet with him as well.
Right.
Like, of course Trump said don't tell them that.
Right.
The whole thing was set up, and that's the idea, the thing was set up to minimize it, to minimize Trump's sort of like guilt, or the appearance of Trump's guilt as part of this investigation. So, you know, Cohen is saying that all of those conversations ended at a specific date, and why would he need to say this except that Trump needs him to say this to make sure that he's not guilty of some sort of collusion.
Yes.
So it all makes perfect sense. The BuzzFeed reporters that reported it are standing by the story, even as every other news outlet has been like, oh, well, if the special counsel is not in.
Right.
But the special counsel's denial is very specific.
Right.
Because it literally just says that the specific statements were wrong. It doesn't say that the gist of them was wrong.
Right.
It's like legalese, you know?
Yeah. And they also are, I mean, they're standing by it because they're like, we trust our sources. These are good sources. And it was multiple sources, too. It wasn't just, you know, one bozo that they talked to. I mean, they corroborated it. I mean, they did the work that you would want to do as a news organization before you publish something like this.
Yeah. Well, and also one of them, Jason Leopold, said that some of what they published in the story had actually been in earlier reports that he's written on the Trump-Moscow project, including some conversations with some other advisors like Felix Sater about trying to give Putin an apartment in the Moscow Towers.
Oh, right.
They had his text messages.
Yeah.
So they were sort of like, A, some of this is corroborated by the fact that it's already been reported.
Right.
And also, then they got into a weird tiff with the special counsel's office about how politely they had asked for comment on the matter. Which is another weird thing that happened.
Yeah.
Where Jason Leopold got into a tiff with the spokesperson for the special counsel because they said that his request for comment had been, quote, shockingly casual.
Oh, boy.
In any case, Giuliani got on TV and made it worse.
Because he basically spoke specifically to this.
Yeah.
And
multiple shows.
I got the pleasure to see him on Meet the Press because I just was awake. And I was like, I haven't watched Meet the Press in a really long time.
Sure.
And it used to be like a Sunday morning thing of mine. But usually I'm frantically getting ready to go to church because I have to be there at 9. But I just like happened to be up and I was like, kind of casually, I'm just like, I'm going to throw this on. And he was the first guest. And I was like, this is going to be fantastic. And then, yes, exactly. And that's exactly what I got. Because besides all of the insane things that he said on multiple Sunday shows, also just seeing a Rudy Giuliani interview, it's just so manic.
Oh,
it's so, like, he's crazy. I don't know if he always was. I don't think he always
he
was,
always
but
was.
He's like,
don't worry about that.
But he has some sort of new way about him. And I think also it's because he really is just super in over his head. And I think that he's like, the wheels are constantly spinning.
Yeah.
And the mouth should stop moving while the wheels are spinning.
No.
But unfortunately
That's
for
never
him,
been his thing.
The mouth goes and the wheels go. And they go at the same time. And they're not communicating with each other properly always.
Yes. We're talking about a man who held a press conference to announce that he was divorcing his wife because he was cheating on her. Like, we're not talking about a man who...
Yeah.
I mean, we're not talking about a man who's ever been acting in a sane fashion. This is like another thing like Donald Trump where New Yorkers know that this is vintage Giuliani, but he wasn't the mayor of America, even though he wanted to be.
Sure.
And so no one realizes that he's this crazy.
Yeah.
He's this bad at things. He's not good at his job.
Right.
He never has been.
Yeah.
And he was certainly not good at his job while he was appearing on Sunday shows this week.
No, he wasn't.
Because he managed to undercut their own claim about when these Russian negotiations
were over. Sounds like they were going all the way up until literally the election.
Yeah.
October or November.
Meet the Press, he literally said, "I can tell you Trump's counsel to Michael Cohen throughout the entire period was tell the truth. We thought he was telling the truth. I still believed he may have been telling the truth when he testified before Congress." But then like a few minutes later, he's asked about the timeline and he said, the timeline of the conversations about the deal. And he says, "There weren't a lot of them, but there were conversations. Can't be sure the exact date. Probably up to, could be as far as October, November."
Yeah. Supposedly they were over in January.
Yeah.
Like, basically before the entire campaign
The January
started.
Of the year before.
The January of 2016.
Right.
Right.
The
Not
January...
of 2017 when he took office.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So, supposedly, according to the lie that him and Cohen crafted together.
Yes. Exactly.
January 2016 was the end of the line. But according to Giuliani, conversations continued up until the election.
Yeah.
And then he was on Jake Tapper, and he tried to sort of, like, they... So Jake Tapper asks, "So it's possible that President Trump talked to Michael Cohen about his testimony?" And he goes, "I don't know if it happened or didn't happen. And so what if he talked to him about it?"
Yeah, that's one of his, like, his
so
his
what
new
if,
things.
If we lied.
Right. It's like, they've done that so many times. Like, you know, so what if we talked to Putin? Like, collusion isn't a crime. You know, it's just like they keep sort of like going into these technicalities or like, you know, oh, maybe he did talk to him because he was his lawyer. So, like, wouldn't he? And just, you know, like, all of these things are sort of like, no,
right.
Rudy. I also love, my favorite thing was he said something to the effect of, like, because he was just, like, talking, like, broadly about the case, and he's, like, said something about, like, you know, how he basically said that he hadn't learned any new facts since May.
Since May.
Yeah, because he was, like, he came on in, like, April or something, and he, like, basically was talking about how it, like, took him a while to get up to speed and blah, blah, blah,
yes,
you know,
sir,
whatever.
As I recall.
Yeah, and, but then he was, like, but I haven't learned anything new about anything since May, and I was, like, That seems accurate. That tracks.
Sure.
Those numbers crunch.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
so they had the attorney general hearings this week as well for William Barr.
Yeah, William Barr, right.
Which no one watched because they were boring. But they did ask him about whether a sitting president could obstruct justice in the hearings. And he said that a president could be guilty of obstructing justice if he told someone to commit perjury.
Oh, well, here we are.
Which is very specifically what Trump is being accused of here.
Right.
So Rudy was also asked about this by Chuck Todd and said, "A president firing someone who works for him, if he does no other corrupt act other than just fire him," which is not, once you're firing someone, that, like, why are you firing them? It can't obstruct justice because that's what Article 2 of the Constitution gives him solely. But then he said, but, you know, it shouldn't matter because it's not like he was being accused of threatening to have your kids kidnapped or break your legs. Like,
oh, yeah, that's right. He was like, usually when there's obstruction, it's like you tell somebody that they have to do something or else I'm going to do this.
Right.
And, like, went into, like, a bunch of mob scenarios.
Right, exactly. Which is his legal experience is.
Yeah, but it was so funny, though, because when that interview was over, they didn't go to break or anything. It was just, like, immediately Mark Warner in the studio, and Rudy had been by satellite. And Chuck Todd and Mark Warner, who's, like, the head of the Intelligence Committee in the Senate, like, had this moment of knowing where, like, they looked at each other with this face of, like, I think that just happened.
Right.
Like, did that just happen? Were we all here present, hearing the same thing that just happened right there. And, like, Mark Warner was like, there was a lot of new information in there for me. Like, that is a big deal if that went through October or November of them talking about the Russia project. Like, this is, that is not what we thought was going
Giuliani
on.
Giuliani is such the perfect lawyer for Donald Trump. It's like every time that he goes through one of these phases, I'm like, I can't believe that the casting has been this perfect straight through. Like, Trump really is a television genius. Because this is exactly who represents a guy like Trump.
Right, exactly.
It's like Michael Cohen, like Michael, a sleazy guy who lies and is involved in some sort of tax scam. Right. And like Rudy Giuliani.
And taxi scam.
And taxi scam, exactly. And Rudy Giuliani, who like doesn't know which facts he knows. And keeps confirming the wrong ones.
Right, like, I know.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Trump also tried to offer a deal to end the shutdown this week.
Yes, had a big speech on Saturday about it.
One of the saddest negotiating positions anyone's ever established.
I know. It really is.
He decided to offer pretty limited protections for Dreamers in exchange for $5.7 billion to build his border wall. Now, some facts. Just a year ago, the Democrats offered him
five times that.
Five
almost.
Times that amount.
In exchange for DACA. Yeah.
He, a person who had said he was in support of DACA, said no.
Right.
So why he thought that offering a worse version of that deal for less money for himself on a thing that he had already reneged on once and no one could trust him to do would be a great negotiating position is beyond anyone.
And also really pissed off his base.
Yes. Too. Well, of course.
I mean, Ann Coulter just dragged him on Twitter and hard and dirty style. Just basically like, oh, we're doing amnesty now for $5 billion. Yeah. Like that's... That's what we're up to. And of course, it's not amnesty, but I mean,
Ann
Coulter thinks if you
it.
Let one, you know, Mexican over the border, then you've given 12 million of them amnesty.
Right. Her numbers are always a little bit inflated.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, he was basically offering, also, he wasn't offering actual protection for DACA.
No, he was just pushing it.
He was like, we'll talk about it in 3 years, basically. He was basically saying they could have temporary legal status and work authorizations for 3 years if their protection gets revoked.
Yeah.
But of course, he doesn't seem to have the power to do that at the moment because the courts won't let him. So it's not even a deal.
Right. No, it's not. And also, you know, I think what is, because I've heard some people, idiots mostly, but talk about, just because we are at a point where the shutdown has gone on quite a while. We're finally starting to see some of the repercussions. People are not getting paid. Like,
it's not
should we just do this to open the government. Like, if we were ready to give him five times more money than that. But
You
can't trust him to deliver. And the whole point is that we shouldn't be... He has bills to open the government right now.
Yeah.
And even Fox News knows this. I sent you a clip the other day of Chris Wallace just really laying into Mike Pence about how the Democrats, you know, or, you know, Pence was saying that the Democrats were just being insincere because why wouldn't they just do this? Like, we're giving them a good deal. We're giving them DACA, blah, blah, blah. Like, let's open the government. Let's open the government. And Chris Wallace is like, you can open the government.
Yeah.
And that is the whole point here. And also, I heard somebody say the other day, and I don't even know who it was, but I was like, oh, this is a good way to put it, too. Like, especially with DACA only being basically like a 3-year push, he's offering, you know, a very temporary fix for something for almost $6 billion for something that is very permanent.
Right.
Like that will not go away forever unless somebody decides to tear it down.
Well, unless you take, also, it's a steel barrier. So unless you take unless you take a chainsaw to it and easily take it apart, which apparently is possible.
Exactly. So it's a ridiculous deal in that sense anyway, just because it's like, what, just we're getting 3 years for a
policy, ridiculous border wall?
Right, for a border wall, and also not enough money to, like, I think the Democrats would be of a mind to give him this amount of money if it was for border security, quote unquote, because, like, none of them are against that. I mean, they have offered him, that's what that $25 billion was for. It wasn't specifically for a wall, but it was like, let's deal with, like, ports of entry where drugs actually do come from because they don't
not
come across the
ridiculous.
Border. Let's deal with, like, technology at the border. Like, let's put some drones down there, whatever cockamamie ideas they have. Like, it's just that he wants $6 billion to, and that's not enough to do the wall, by the way.
That's
like
not.
That's like 100 miles of the wall. I mean, we need to give him, like, ultimately, if to finish that wall, we need to give him almost 10 times that amount of money. Yeah. I mean, people have estimated that. It, I mean, you know, way, it's going to cost way more than $6 billion to build that wall.
Yes.
Like, this is starter money for the wall.
In any case, it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that the Democrats rejected his offer basically as he was making it.
They did. Thankfully, you know what? I have to say, I'm really happy. We are in a time right now where I feel good about Nancy Pelosi being the Speaker of the House.
I know, which I didn't know was going to happen to me.
I didn't know it was going to happen either. I sort of...
I still don't trust Chuck.
I don't either. Oh, my God. Did you see the SNL cold open from Saturday night?
No.
It was Deal or No Deal. You know, the suitcase right. one, basically. And it was with Trump. And then there were, like, members of Congress and various people like holding the suitcases. Yeah, and it's like they went to Pelosi first, and it was like she had some just like some sassy comment in her suitcase or whatever. Right. And then they went to Chuck Schumer, and the host was like, "So, what would you give Trump to reopen the government?" And he opened the suitcase, and it said, "Whatever you want." And I was like, yep. "While maybe not entirely true, it's close.
Pretty true,
that's, right? That's, I mean, like if it got him sort of like." You know, a great photo op with the president, like, signing some deal to reopen the government. Like, he's here for that. He doesn't care what's in it.
All he wants is the opportunity to take a picture.
Right.
Regarding, like, that's, Nancy Pelosi wants to negotiate. Chuck right. Schumer wants to take a picture.
Right. And Nancy Pelosi also wants an opportunity to drag someone publicly.
Yes.
Like, if she can make someone look like a fool... Sometimes it's members from her own party.
Right.
Sometimes it's members of the left.
Right.
I don't love that always.
Nope.
But it's a favorite pastime of hers.
She's
and if she's directing it at the president, which is an easy target, I'm here for it.
Yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. The Democrats, I have been shocked by their fortitude. I think that is Nancy Pelosi. I mean, I know it's not Chuck Schumer. Right. I mean, like, for so many years, we were so bad at negotiating. And even when she was speaker last time, we were bad at negotiating. P.S. Like, this is not something that she's never been guilty of. But we have for years been the kind of people who would take any deal to do something. And, like, we don't own this shutdown.
No.
I have another thing that I think should happen soon, which is I think the TSA should go on strike.
Oh, well. Yeah.
That would end the shutdown if no one could have air travel anymore.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, I think that they would be concerned that they would just bring in scabs or whatever, but people would not stand for that because that's a real public safety concern.
It's a huge public safety concern.
Like, luggage handlers.
No. Well, and it's a terrorism concern.
It's a terrorism concern. The TSA
Republicans aren't going to want that.
Was like, fuck this, which they should be. They don't get paid enough money for them to be working without pay right now. And they are the people that have the sort of most, not the most dangerous job of anyone who's being required to work, but the most sort of like publicly facing, media friendly, dangerous job.
Right.
If they went on strike, somebody would solve this.
Yeah.
I think they should do it. I know it's not easy to just call a strike.
Right.
But they have, this is
even harder for federal employees, I think, actually, too.
But this is grounds. Here's the thing. Even if you have a law about striking, the whole point of a strike is losing your entire workforce makes you want to negotiate.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's the thing that we learned from those teacher strikes. A lot of them didn't have unions that could, because the unions had been basically busted by that point.
Right, exactly.
But they were like, well, if we don't all show up to work, that's a strike. And what are you going to do?
Right.
Because you have to do something to get us back to work.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole point of a strike.
Yep.
I think a lot of federal workers should be striking at this moment in time.
I mean, I'm with you.
But certainly the TSA.
Yeah.
In any case, I'm very strike happy because we have a strike going on here. So,
yeah, that's right.
I'm looking for exciting other strike opportunities to follow.
Sure.
Meanwhile, in the midst of all of this, everyone is announcing their presidential run.
That's right.
On Tuesday, Gillibrand announced.
Yep.
She announced on Colbert.
On Colbert, right.
And then
she did the classic, I'm announcing something and I'll announce something else later.
Yeah, they're all doing
announce something more later.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems like mostly what this has created is angry commenters on her Facebook page who are not here for her when she treated Al
Franken. It came up as like an advertisement in my Facebook feed and I just like saw that the first comment was like rage about Al Franken and so I clicked into the comments and then I sent you like I think two pages of screenshots
it's hundreds
forever,
of comments
and it was just like and it was not men that were mad that she had
it was older
done
women
that.
Primarily it seemed like at least, but like in a way too, where it happened so quickly in the midst of an advertising blitz that I don't think it was like bots. I think it was real people.
Oh no, I think so too.
Because there were oddly specific comments on there too.
Yeah.
That
was such a miscalculation on her part because I actually there are. I mean, I probably would not vote for her in a primary, but there are things that I think that she adds to the discourse, and she can still add them,
I suppose. She was tailoring her record to run, so she was making progressive votes.
Right, I know. And
she was really having principles for a while.
Right, and doing... And I realize how she sort of, like, got wrapped up into this, because it was...
I see what happened.
It was a thing that she was doing, and she was directing it in the correct places up until Al Franken.
Yeah.
And so... But because she, it was sort of, like, her thing at the time, she... I think felt like that she couldn't not because it would be disingenuous if all of a sudden like a member of her own party in the body that she's in, she just sort of like let be.
Yeah.
But still, it wasn't the right move because.
Well, and also.
I mean, Al Franken should be announcing his candidacy for president right now.
He reacted appropriately to the allegations, which made it so that all of a sudden, like it kind of. It didn't sit with people the same way that some of these other ones did, where everyone was just sort of like, well, I couldn't have known that whatever, I never, you know, or denied it or whatever. Al Franken made the appropriate attempts to be like, God, this is horrifying. You know, what can I do and what can we do to move forward on this issue?
Yeah.
And then she didn't allow them to investigate it. So it kind of, she just, it was, I know that it is sort of like a small thing in a certain sense because she really was working on these issues. And these are important issues. Yep. I mean, and she's someone who I'm sure has dealt with so much sexual harassment at work because a younger, pretty woman in the Senate is no cakewalk. And the way she gets treated there is not great.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure part of it is just like rage at how she's had to put up with so much bullshit.
Yeah, probably.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
But it almost gives her a woman problem, which is not a thing I would... Not a term I like to use normally.
Right, when, and a woman problem is like a woman.
But when you're the opposite of candidate
that is her whole thing.
I was going to say, when like you're the candidate who's really talking about women's issues.
Yeah, I mean, her organization, her PAC is like one that funds women candidates.
Yeah.
It's getting women into politics. I mean, she has sort of like, and, you know, she's a mother. She talks a lot about, she talks about women's issues more than probably any of the other candidates.
Oh, absolutely.
Including some of the other women, because it's like a big pet issue of hers. So to have a problem with that constituency, I think really is...
It's confusing.
It's confusing, and it's a recipe for not winning anything.
It can't be taken out of the context of her also being sort of a Wall Street candidate. So, you know, there's not the incentive to kind of forgive her for her passions in the same way, because she still has the problem of coming across as a little bit calculating and a little opportunistic in the way that Hillary Clinton did, for example. So I think that might be part of why no one can forgive her for this. I think there are everyone is going to have made missteps in this.
Yeah, I know. As everyone announces, I just sort of like, whether it's a misstep or a policy issue or whatever, I'm realizing that there's... No one perfect in this batch.
And I like a lot of them. I like, and she's someone also who, like, I'm not super excited about her candidacy for policy reasons at the moment. I mean, maybe she'll turn out to be fantastic. And I'm sort of over this Wall Street candidate situation a little bit, in part. Yeah. But I'm excited that she's in the discourse. I think she adds something to the discourse, for sure. So I'm excited to see her in here. I feel like it's so weird that she didn't see the fallout of this Franken thing happening the way it did. Because the reason everyone's so mad about it is we all saw what was happening in a way where you couldn't even articulate it. Because it was like, I guess on the face of it, he probably is a creepy fucker. He's a Hollywood comedian who, you know, like whatever. But I mean, I'm not here to say that I know anything about Al Franken personally. But the sort of optics of it were so off that it's like crazy that she didn't see what was happening while it was happening. Because we all saw what was happening and we were like, these aren't equivalent acts, and you can't sort of like, we can't live in a world where there's no way to come back from this when you have a record of doing work on behalf of women constituents.
Right.
And I don't know, there was just something sort of broadly miscalculated about that I'm shocked she didn't notice at the time.
Yeah.
And that doesn't worry me, but it just annoys me.
Right.
But she is effective. She's someone who actually
gets stuff
done.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I like her in the Senate, which I'm assuming that she will continue to be.
I like everyone in the Senate.
Right, exactly.
I mean, I like everyone to stay in their job. Especially for our next person.
Well, for her, I mean.
She's an effective senator.
She's an effective senator, right? Exactly.
Kamala Harris also announced. I feel sort of ho-hum about this for a specific reason, which is California deserves dedicated representatives in the Senate. Sure. We have so little say for so many people in the Senate. And listen, I'm happy she's our senator. Yeah. I am sort of sick of these freshmen senators coming in and thinking they can be Obama and just like announce that they're running for president because they've been in the Senate for 1 minute.
Right.
But she's also someone who has specific skills that are suited to the Senate.
Yeah.
And I am someone who wants our senator to be available and not fucking running for president.
She's been crushing it so far, which I'm sure is why she thinks that she gets to be the president.
But that's, first of all, she has problematic record issues that are going to come back to haunt her. She's not going to be the president.
Right.
California deserve, we have one basically dead senator who doesn't do shit.
Yeah.
And then we have this one person who is the only person giving us a voice in the Senate, a body where we're so heavily outrepresented by idiots in Wyoming.
Right. And we have one who doesn't care about
what's going on in the world at all.
So.
No, exactly.
Right.
I just like, I'm sort of personally just frustrated that.
Yeah.
We're now going to have to also have a distracted one senator.
Yeah.
We basically have one senator for 36 million people.
Right.
For a fifth of the economy. Yeah. For the largest state in the union. Because our second senator is not up to anything. And now that senator is only going to be half our senator. Because she's going to be busy running for president.
Yeah.
That gets me.
Right. I get that. I feel like, I don't know. The more I look at this list and realize there is not, like I said, anyone, there's never going to be anyone perfect, I guess. All that, because even I feel like
there never is.
I feel like Sanders is probably less perfect this time even than he was the last time, although I'm sure he's probably going to announce and I may just go ahead and support him in the primary. But I mean, like, if I'm looking at the list of like 30 some people that literally could be running, or, you know, 10 that have announced already, like if I had to pick one based on vague things that I thought were the right thing to have in this moment in time, I feel like she gets me the closest.
Interesting.
But policy-wise, you're right. I think she's got some issues. And I think that one of the things that I think is sort of interesting is just having been a prosecutor, you know, she's, I think, at least gonna, a lot of people like the idea that she is mixed race.
Right.
She's actually really sort of has some race problems.
Yeah, because of her attorney general time.
Just in terms of sort of like her history as a prosecutor.
Yeah.
So that's sort of interesting as well.
Well, she's like Gillibrand, who has issues with women
just being black sort of like doesn't, there's going to be other black candidates in that are running. But I don't know. I think that she's, I don't know. I like her. She's likable. I feel like a woman seems right this time for sure. Like, I don't know. I don't know why. You're, I don't know that general, I could explain it to you necessarily. But
with
like,
her is in part that I don't think she's a very compelling speaker.
She's not a very compelling speaker.
Because of that, and she's sort of newer to this scale of speaking. Yes. I think that she's going to have a hard time connecting with voters. That's what I find. Every time that I see her speak in an
array. I think she'll be good in a debate.
She'll be great in a debate. But I also, she might, because she's a prosecutor, she might have the kinds of issues that women in debates have when it comes to these things.
She's mean.
She's going to seem mean. Yeah, no, that's why she's so good. That's why she's so good on panel. I mean, on committee.
Right.
Because she's not afraid to say the thing. And I like that about her. But I don't, I think she's going to be someone who is going to have to do some performance work, like Hillary Clinton had to do some performance work. And I don't know if she, it's, she's not the freshman senator that has the Obama it factor.
No, she's, I agree
and
with
I
you.
And I still maintain that in this field, Liz Warren has the most it factor. I know that's a crazy thing.
No,
I think people don't agree with me, but that's because they're not watching. They haven't seen all these people speak live. They don't realize what, you know, what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But I mean, she's, I think that, because Gillibrand has a similar problem. I think she's a slightly better speaker than Harris, but she doesn't have that it factor either.
Right.
She's not engaging. Cory Booker has that it factor, but he's going to have such a troubled candidacy because he's a confusing candidate for a lot of reasons. One being that, have you been following his Instagram?
No.
It's like long-winded, crazy thoughts on poems and things. Like it's so crazy.
Oh.
That I'm like, I don't know that he has the judgment to be as controlled as you need to be during a presidential race.
Sure.
But I feel like there are, but he does have that it factor that he can deliver a speech and kind of make you like, oh, yeah, we're in, you know?
Totally.
I think these candidates who don't have that it factor are going to suffer a lot of the more gendered problems that Hillary Clinton did have. I mean, I obviously maintain that her issues were policy first.
Sure.
Because she wasn't an attractive candidate if you were a Democrat.
Right.
But I also think that she lacks the kind of it factor that makes running for president a possibility. And I don't think that it's that women can't have that it factor.
Yeah.
It gets portrayed differently, for sure.
Right, it does.
That's unfair, but that's unfair. Life.
Yes.
But running for president is a media spectacle. It's not about your policy credentials. It is about it's about your salesmanship.
That's true.
And so the idea that we have all of these people who maybe have serious policy backgrounds but can't do the salesmanship aspect, they're not going to be the president. You can't be the president without the salesmanship.
Yeah.
Al Gore didn't have it. That's why he wasn't the president. John Kerry didn't have it. That's why he wasn't the president. John McCain didn't even have it. And that's...
Right. Not in comparison to who he was running against.
John McCain in another year might have had it because he was charismatic, but didn't have it the way that Obama had it. This is... And Clinton is the master of it.
Yeah.
The original Clinton.
The original... Right.
The elder presidential Clinton.
Yes.
Or not the elder. I guess just the first Clinton. But I mean, that it factor is so central to your ability to run in a race, and specifically in a race against a media personality.
Yeah.
That I'm glad, like I said, I love a huge primary. I'm excited to have all of them in the debate. And I think Kamala Harris adds something really important to the debate because her prosecutor background and her attorney general background gives her a different footing in the law than some of the other candidates have.
Yeah.
She doesn't have the sort of, or maybe she can develop it, but she doesn't currently have that it factor that you need to compete in a media environment.
Yeah.
And a lot of these people don't. I mean, it's not just her.
I can see that.
But that's, I think, why I feel kind of like, ugh, now we lose our senator. She's not going to be the president. It's like, great that she's in the debate. I like anyone being in the debate, but I like more having representation in Washington.
Sure. Yeah. I can see her doing well. I could see her being one of the latter
folks. Yeah, I can see her staying in.
Hanging around.
Yeah. But I think she is not going to be able to compete with some of the... And she could be a VP contender maybe too. Like I would rather this time around we have a not brand new president and Obama style of brand new president experience statement VP.
Sure.
I don't mind if we switch that this time.
Yeah, I think she'd be a great VP candidate depending on who is at the top of the ticket. Another person who I think would be a great VP candidate depending on who is at the top of the ticket is Sherrod Brown.
Yeah.
Being from Ohio and also being a progressive, like
with a real record.
With a real record. I just feel like the older white dudes are just
Beto is starting to get some pushback.
Well,
I totally get because
I do too. Well, and that's what I have been saying because I have some friends who are like, Beto. And I'm like, I have news for you. He was the right candidate to maybe beat Ted Cruz in Texas. And now that he has lost, I don't have any fucking use for that guy.
No.
Because he has voted with Trump something like 30% of the time. He's one of the most Republican voting Democrats that we have. He's like in the 90th percentile of Democrats who vote with Republicans. He's voted against the party like something like almost 300 times. Yeah. He is nearly a Republican.
He's a Texas Democrat.
He's a Texas Democrat.
That's great for him in Texas.
Right, exactly. But you know what? He's even way more conservative than his district is because he's in one of the only sort of like hyper liberal districts there. Like the makeup of his district is heavily Democratic. I mean, like a AOC could win that district. Yeah. So it's not him
also,
either. As soon as he gets into the primary, he's gonna
be out.
People are gonna rake him over the coals.
A good example of the opposite of the phenomenon I'm talking about, where we also have to be careful not to just have a media phenomenon. He has the it factor for sure. Like he's a guy with the it factor. That's why this thing took off the way that it did. He embodies that.
Yeah.
Thing that that Obama has and that I think Liz Warren has, even though it's a different kind of thing.
But I think,
But we also are not going to have a presidential candidate who doesn't have the background to be the presidential candidate.
No.
In this, like, that we have to be careful not to go to either extreme in that. We're going to have a candidate who has that factor to some degree. You have to have it to compete.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot, like, Sherrod Brown doesn't have it. So he's not going to be the president.
Sherrod Brown doesn't have it. Very likable. Like, he seems like a friendly guy.
Great VP like, choice.
Great VP, right, exactly. I can see him filling a sort of Joe Biden-esque role.
I was going to say.
A little less handsy, but.
especially if the candidate is too moderate.
That's what I'm
year.
Saying. Like, I think that, like, if you end up with, you know, let's say if it does end up being Harris.
Right, a Kamala
like,
Harris
I
type.
Do you know what yeah. I mean? It's like, then he is like perfect because he like shores up the left. He's liked by the base. He's got progressive cred. He's a white dude. He's from Ohio. Like, I like him as a VP candidate so much. Like, yeah. Just because I do. Like,
I said that Clinton should have made him. That,
right.
He was the
He was supposedly vetted.
He was
I think.
The obvious choice.
Yeah.
He was clearly the right yeah. choice.
He keeps winning in Ohio. I mean, he won re-election big time this year, and it wasn't super close in a year no. where they, you know, elected a
Republican
governor.
No.
And I mean, he is liked there, and he's a progressive. So, like, people are voting for him because they like him, probably. Voting for him as a progressive when they also still voted for a Republican.
Well, it's
for governor.
Actually not as hard for people to win when they
it's
have
not.
Principles.
Principles, right, exactly.
So, I mean, it could yeah. be that he's just running on an actual platform and not yeah. on the vague Midwestern Democratic right. platform that so many people right. lose with in the Midwest.
And he didn't announce, but he's, like, doing some dignity of work tour across, like, basically all of the early primary states
yeah.
right now.
So
it's
he has announced in the
he's
sense.
He's going on a listening tour, pretty
right.
much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And I feel this is definitely a run for a VP slot.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that he would even
no.
think
And I
otherwise.
Like him enough, actually, that I could see a world where maybe I would even vote for him.
Yeah, depending on who's left standing.
I like him a lot.
Depending on who's left. It depends on who's left standing.
Yeah.
You know.
Although we're going to get to vote before it's just people left
oh
standing.
Oh, my God. I'm
time.
So excited about that.
I know.
You're
going to have all the choices.
Making a choice.
I feel like almost everybody is still going to be in by the time it gets here.
I'm so excited to have the option of choosing between progressive candidates,
right.
which never happens.
I know.
And then I get to be like, then I finally do get to consider things beyond principle. Because normally I have to be like, well, these people don't even agree with me on the basics. So, like, I'm not going to vote for them. This time I could be like, who has what I think it takes to, who has the it factor? Who has the
right.
strategy? Who's better at, you know, who's right for this year? Like, I suddenly can ponder questions.
Yes. Yeah.
Which I've never gotten to do.
No, it's very exciting.
Meanwhile, here are some other people that are probably announcing today and or right. giving big speeches as if they're running for president already.
Right. Joe Biden.
Obviously.
Joe Biden and Michael Bloomberg were both at the same event with Al Sharpton for MLK Day, like,
right.
giving big speeches. So I don't know if they were announcing, but they were,
but
like...
But they are both running for president.
But, like, there was basically... I saw an article about, like, all of the people who are sort of, like, still on the list of people that we think are running who were, like, giving big civil rights speeches today.
Yeah.
So, like, you know...
Yeah, why does Michael Bloomberg need to give an MLK Day speech if he's not running for president? He literally isn't even in public office right now.
Right.
He's just a guy.
Right, exactly. Yes.
But
Cory Booker.
The two of them need to, Biden and Bloomberg need to reconsider before
it's
too late.
Yeah.
Cory Booker.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, obviously.
The bees. Biden, Bloomberg, Booker, and Bernie.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you can tell, I love, actually, in this array, when you said that they had all been bees, and then you were like, well, and then I got to Sanders, but of course I called him Bernie.
What everybody calls him.
Well, that's what everyone calls him, but also, that's telling. People don't call Cory Booker Cory.
Right.
You know?
Sure.
We're not
yeah.
called, like, maybe Joe Biden
maybe
has
Joe.
A few first
yeah.
names, but like
Uncle
you would,
Joe.
Uncle Joe, but you would not really, he doesn't really, he's not someone who you regularly refer to in conference.
No.
Like, you would never be like, and then Joe said. But
right.
you would say, and Bernie said.
Hey, he's like Madonna.
Yeah, exactly. But also that means that he has the sort of the people thing
yeah.
that you need.
Yeah.
You know, because why is Maxine Waters such a phenomenon?
Right.
If you say Maxine, you know exactly who we're talking
right.
about.
Anti-Maxine, really.
You know, anti-Maxine, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But like even, you know, in my parents' district in New York, if you say Jerry, you're talking about
Jerry
Nadler.
Yeah,
like
right.
you
yeah.
want your politicians to be on a first name basis with you.
Right, yeah.
In any case, in one other piece of disappointing news.
Yeah.
Gavin Newsom is running ads in early primary states.
Yeah, is
Why?
That weird? They're mostly, I mean, they're sort of fundraising things, but they're mostly like list building
right.
ads. So it could be beyond 2020 or it could just be, who knows what it could be. But I need him to really settle down, more so than Kamala Harris.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely. Yeah. No, I need him
yeah. I need him to stay there and keep... writing checks.
That's right.
As I like to say.
Exactly.
And he's already talked about some that he's intending
to write.
to write.
I need him to be available to write to said checks.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, I need him. Like, already, we already know he's kind of a lazy guy. Like, we elected him knowing that he's, like, a little flashy and not a nose to the grindstone guy.
Right.
We need to keep him focused, California. We need to make sure that we're on duty now. We're like on nanny duty for Gavin Newsom. Right. We need to keep him on task. Right. So let's make sure.
And go figure Gavin Newsom wants to run for president. I mean, who's shocked by this news?
Yeah, but also who is thinking it's a possibility? Nobody.
Right, I was going to say, just got sworn in a week ago.
It's a waste of everyone's time to even be worrying about this right now.
Right, yeah.
Not when there's checks to write.
Yeah.
In any case, there was some hilarious shade back and forth in Congress this week between Nancy Pelosi and Trump that went beyond Trump telling Cohen that he should lie about their Trump Tower in Moscow
because
situation.
Because she uninvited him from the State of the Union address, which is supposed to be on January 29th, which is his speech, yes. But it's in her body, so she can do whatever the hell she wants.
Exactly.
And she was like, because of the shutdown.
Yeah.
She was like, you can't come. Well, she said it was security reasons, but I mean, she's just doing her thing, which is fine.
But also, she did say, and I think it's fair to say, given that that everyone who is important to the functioning of government is in one room.
Right. I've seen Lone Survivor before. That's right. Except on the ABC. Lone Survivor.
But a lot of security workers would be working without pay at that event.
Right.
That just doesn't seem like the best setup for a situation, you know?
Yeah.
So then, because he was feeling petty, he canceled. She had this undisclosed plan to lead a congressional delegation to Afghanistan on Thursday. And he revoked her access to her planned military transport.
Right. So they were going to go commercially.
Right. But then the White House leaked the details.
Yeah. Which is a huge security risk. So she was super pissed about that. Because she's like, you can't be saying when I'm getting on a commercial plane like that.
To Afghanistan. Like, by the way, can you fly commercial to Afghanistan? Because I was shocked to find that out.
Yeah. I don't know.
But he also called it a 7-day excursion and a public relations event when he was canceling the initial military transport.
Yeah. Well, I thought this got to a hilarious place because I think besides the fact that I was loving her shade over this, I think where we got to by the end of this, because I think she even may have made some sort of comment about it, but like basically what ended up being reported was the amount of times that Nancy Pelosi had already made a trip overseas to do this, and Trump has literally only been once, and it was sort of after he got kind of berated for not having gone,
and
over the holidays or whatever.
It was during the shutdown.
Right, and it was, So, good on her. I don't know if she saw that coming or not. Maybe she did, but either way, she got to a good place with that tit for tat.
And now the OMB is saying that no one can use government-owned or government-chartered aircraft during the shutdown anymore.
Right.
So they canceled Steve Mnuchin's trip to Davos. But then also, they had just the day before flown Melania Trump to Florida on a government jet. And now, is she stuck there?
She hopes.
Where's Melania?
She hopes she is.
She can't come back now?
Yeah.
Is she going to have to fly commercial back? Can we leak the details of that?
Right.
Meanwhile, in Congress, as Nancy Pelosi is navigating the storm of congressional delegation logistics,
AOC
is leading what seemed like the most fun excursion possible.
I mean,
they looked like they were having
a blast. Yeah.
It made it suddenly seem like government is like fun and interesting.
Right.
And all they did was she and just a group of other House freshmen. I don't know that she was the leader of it. I think it was just like a thing they all did together.
I think Katie Hill.
Yeah, Katie Hill was there. I think Lauren Underwood was there. Ayanna Pressley was there. Like all the usuals.
Yeah.
were there. Just like marched to the Senate building to hand deliver a letter to Mitch McConnell demanding he reopen the government.
Yep.
And then they couldn't find him. He wasn't in his office. He wasn't in the cloakroom. He wasn't on the Senate floor. So they left copies of their letter everywhere and Instagram lived the event.
Right. We're hashtagging it, where's Mitch?
Well, yeah, so AOC on the Senate subway has, like, this video where they're all sitting in the Senate subway car together being like, we couldn't find him, we checked everywhere, like they're on a school trip. It was so adorable. And then she was like, hashtag where's Mitch? And then it blew up.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and this batch of women are ruling the world right now. They're so fun. They're, like, tweeting back and forth at each other. Like, one of them, like, tweeted, like, Spice Girls lyrics, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want, 800,000 people to get their paycheck or something like that. And then, like, that was Katie Hill, I think. And then AOC, like, picked it up and, like, tweeted the next verse of the song with, like, different lyrics about the shit. I mean, like, they're the Spice Girls.
They're doing
you guys.
Yeah.
They're, like,
They're like the actual embodiment of girl power.
Yes, they are. Yeah, it's so great.
And this is what's fun about having activists in Congress. Yeah. Because as freshmen, normally you don't really get to do anything. But they are just like launching protests from inside the body. Yes. In a way that is actually creating news.
Yes, absolutely. And also, I'm glad that I feel like I read something this week that she is, they're letting her teach the rest of the Democrats how to be using social media.
Oh, that's so smart.
Yes.
Because that's the problem that they're in is there's a bunch of dinosaurs in there.
Yeah.
Who don't know anything about anything. And she's got a direct line to her constituents in a way that none of them do.
Right. Well, and that is what has been so great about this. And that's what I've told everybody who will listen to me, who sort of maybe is on the fence about her or thinks she's a little too far to the left or like maybe isn't like loving some of her tactics just because they are, you know, I mean, like, you know, you're...
She's an activist.
She's an activist. Yeah. It's just sort of like, love the fact that like you are getting to see, we're finally getting to see how the sausage is made around there.
No, exactly.
And like, it's her that's showing it to us and we've never known before.
Yeah.
And like, it's sort of horrifying to know, but like getting to see her do this in a fun way where you actually get to like figure out what's going on in our government, which we have the right to know what's going on in our government. Like, I feel like this, you know, I'm almost 40 and I don't know what's going on in the halls of Congress, but I do now.
Yeah. Well, and also they did some, this is why it's fun to go to the Hill, you guys, because this is what it's like to go to the Hill. You can do this shit. This is why I enjoy being on the Hill.
Right.
And I think a lot of people don't realize that they too have access to these places and these people, but also don't realize that these tactics are the tactics that activists use on the Hill. Lobbyists use different tactics, but activists on the Hill, they make a scene.
Right.
They make a spectacle. If you're wondering why women keep getting torn out of hearings because they've been gotten up in the middle and screamed, it's because that's what you do when you're on the Hill. But showing that there's a way to participate in a way that is fun and social and makes it clear that your government is yours and you can actually take steps towards changing things is kind of a public service she's providing anyway.
Right.
Because seeing how the sausage is made makes it all more accessible and it makes you feel like, oh, I could go to Congress.
Yeah.
What, if we're just riding around looking for Mitch McConnell? I could be in a roving band of people looking for Mitch McConnell.
Right.
I'm happy to serve for Mitch McConnell.
I have Twitter,
exactly. Like, these are things that are accessible to all of us. And they're accessible at every level of government, by the way, guys. It's not just the federal government that is owned by the people. Your state government is also owned by the people in your state. And that means that you can do this in their state house. Your city council is a public building as well. City council offices are also owned by the people. They have to let you in. Like, these are things that at every level of government are accessible to us, but the whole idea is that they don't tell us that because that makes their jobs harder.
Yeah.
So to see people inside Congress be like, well, we'll just go find him. Fuck it.
Right.
Like that was such a charming thing to see because that is what you can do in Congress.
Yeah.
You're able to do that stuff.
Yeah. Love it.
It's great. Meanwhile, Cardi B might be the end of our savior in the shutdown. It's more information about the shutdown has been released via Cardi B Instagram videos than anywhere else.
She had a video go viral where she was just like complaining about the shutdown.
She's into politics.
People not getting paid. Yeah, I didn't realize. Like, she had been quoted before as saying that she like loves political science and like knowing how things like the process works and stuff like that.
And she's made she's made comments on other political issues, but her shutdown video really took off.
Yeah, it did. Yeah. And she also, you know, was bemoaning the fact that it was all over a stupid wall, which was, you know, of course. Yeah, anyway, so Tommy Lauren decided to step in because
way out of her league.
Big time out of her league, yeah. And she said, looks like I am Cardi B is the latest genius political mind to endorse the Democrats. Ha, keep it up, guys. And Cardi B responded, she said, leave me alone, I will dog walk you. And then Tommy Lauren said, I'm sure you would. Still doesn't make your political rambling any less moronic.
Hashtag build that wall.
Yeah. And Cardi B then said, you're so blinded with racism that you don't even realize the decisions the president you root for is destroying the country you claim to love so much. You are a perfect example on no matter how educated or smart you think you are, you still a sheep. Yeah.
And then it turned into a tax policy discussion.
Which was a turn that no one saw coming.
Replied, do you realize these high taxes you complain about are the bedrock of the Democratic Party? You do realize that these high taxes you complain about are the bedrock of the Democratic Party, right? If you want to lower taxes and more economic freedom, beware of the party you're rooting for.
And then Cardi B responded back. She said, I'm paying about $4 million in taxes this year. So most likely I am paying for your insurance. Boom! Uh-huh. That's if your favorite president don't take my tax money for his wall, Mr. Whitebread. Done.
God.
That's it. Shut it down.
What a win that was.
Yeah. Yes. Speaking of Mr. Whitebread.
That's right.
Moving on to Steve King.
He's sick of himself. Right, no. He's had it up to here with his racism. Because.
Oh, my.
The
things that his brain is not. The thing that his mouth is doing.
Right.
Against which never the shows own up in his will head. Of his brain.
Right. It's included censoring himself, or not censoring himself, no. Just criticizing himself. The yeah. House voted on Tuesday to pass a resolution disproving of his statements.
Right. And it passed 424-1, and the one was not Steve King.
No.
The one was Bobby Bush of Illinois, who only voted no because he thought they should be formally censuring him. So literally everyone voted yes on this, except someone who thought it didn't go far enough.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Including Steve King himself,
yes,
who disapproves of his own statements.
He does,
apparently.
Yeah. He said, when asked about the idea of white supremacy, he said, oh, I think this was actually in a speech. He made a speech.
This was last week.
He said, it never shows up in my head, and that he does not, quote, know how it could possibly come out of my mouth.
Yeah, that's right.
So his mouth is just working independently from his mouth is white supremacist.
Right. His head, brain, though, it never shows up in his head.
Not.
His brain loves everyone equally. He says he voted in favor of the resolution because he said his comments were taken out of context, and he too condemns white supremacy and racism. Like, first
but
of all,
you don't.
You have literally no history supporting that argument.
None.
You've spent your whole life saying outwardly racist things.
That's
and
right.
then you can't now be like, but I don't believe in white supremacy.
No.
Also, the comments were not taken out of enough context.
Right,
there wasn't
right.
enough context in the world for
right.
those comments to have suddenly made sense, unless you were quoting someone else saying that and then immediately disapproving of it, which is
yeah.
not what you were doing.
Right. No. No, it wasn't.
So.
No.
And in final terrible news.
Oh, man.
There are now 26 people who are as rich as the poorest 50% of humanity.
Yes. You caught that.
That's right.
Do you want to repeat that?
Yeah. 26 individuals.
Right.
Peoples. Bill Gates's.
26.
26 of them.
Like 26 people that you could fit into a room.
Right. 26 people could fit in my living room right now.
Right.
26 people is smaller than your kindergarten class probably was because you probably went to public school and your class was like 40,000 children.
Right.
Are as rich as the poorest 50%.
Right.
That would be what, 3.5 billion people?
Yes, correct. 3.8
billion
3.8
people,
billion people? Yes.
Of mm-hmm. humanity.
That's right. Yeah.
26 individuals have as much money as those.
And that is being consolidated because
yep.
in 2016 it was 61 people.
That's right.
And in 2017 it was 43 people. And now we're down to 26. So we've been cut in more than half just in the last 2 years. That wealth has consolidated that much.
I want to say something because this goes back to something that Brent and I is a controversial point that Brent and I believe in, but that not a lot of people are in agreement with us on. The economy is a fake thing. We made it up. We made up the monetary system. We don't have to let it operate this way because we invented it. It is with our permission that we
right.
have allowed these people to become this much wealthier
oh,
than the bottom
50%
of
yes.
humanity.
Yeah, and it's with their own permission, too.
And it's with
I mean,
their own permission, too. But I mean, like, we make up the monetary system. We could decide tomorrow that that's not how it works anymore.
Right.
We aren't doing that because we have this weird idea that we're suddenly aspiring to be one of those 26 people.
Yeah.
We're not.
Right.
We're not going to be those people. Sorry about it, guys.
And it's sad, too, because apparently a new billionaire is created every 2 days.
That's right.
And I don't know why.
Neither of us have.
Is there some billionaire lottery that we can get involved in?
I know.
Or do we have to actually do something?
If it's anything like the actual lottery, there's no chance of being that billionaire. The chances are basically equal to zero.
Damn it.
Yeah. But we create the system. The system is ours. It's made up.
That's right.
It doesn't have to be this way.
And also, there are so many things that could be done, too. You know, I mean, this is the Oxfam report that comes out every year.
Oxfam,
they do this every year. And the report said that a 1% wealth tax would raise $418 billion a year. And that is enough to educate every child not in school and also provide health care that would save 3 million deaths due to just
preventable,
poverty.
Yeah,
right.
Preventable poverty-related deaths.
Right.
That's a minor amount of investment from the wealthy that goes a long way.
Yeah.
And that is why you don't allow people to acquire that kind of wealth. Because that money is not in circulation.
No.
That's just sitting there.
Correct.
That's stored wealth. That means there's less for all of us.
Right.
We made up the system. We don't have to let it be that
way. And they're not going to do anything with it. I think that we get into this sort of like, you know,
idea that they're going
to
invest it.
The Republicans like to sort of like, you know, pitch this idea that if everybody just becomes richer, then all of a sudden like that's becomes better for everybody. And we can see that that is
not quite the
opposite of what
ends
is actually
up working with mega
happening.
Wealth.
Right. That's
that
not
maybe
what goes
works
on.
If you are a middle class person who gets a windfall of $10,000 and invests it in your
and
business.
And has to spend
right.
it.
Right, exactly.
Because you needed $10,000
right,
desperately.
That's not the same when you have $3 billion. There's only so much money you can spend.
Right.
The rest of it just sits in wealth.
Right.
And we don't need to let that be how it works.
No, we don't.
We made up the system that gave them this wealth.
Yep.
And that's the other thing. We have to have the mentality.
The problem is that they are
buying the system.
Right. And that is where I think like we and that's why like I get hooked on campaign finance reform so much. But yeah. also just sort of like really systemic changes yeah. are necessary. And yes, we could just do that, but we can't do it while they're in charge of the doing of it.
Of course. Well, but also I think there's a mentality, especially in a capitalist society, that they have somehow earned this wealth and therefore it would be rude of us to take away this thing that they worked hard for.
Right.
That's not what this is.
Right.
We invest as a society in everyone.
Right.
We build roads.
Yeah.
We have public schools.
Right.
We have a police force that protects them from being constantly looted by randos who don't have any money because they own all the wealth.
Right.
Like, we have enforced a society that allows them to be safe with this money.
Yeah.
And we pay for that.
Right.
And they are not paying their fair share towards that.
Right, exactly.
Well, it's our money. It's not, money is all of ours.
Right.
We made up money.
Right. And also, you know, I mean, to your point also just about like that amount of money not even being able to be used by any single human. I mean, look at, you know, Jeff Bezos, for example, mm-hmm. right now is getting a divorce.
Right.
He is going to go from the richest person on earth to the fourth richest person on earth just because of his divorce. And his wife is going to enter being one of the richest people on earth just due to divorcing him. That's like an advertisement for getting a prenup, by the way.
So
but
true.
Regardless, I can, like, Jeff Bezos, by losing literally half of his money, think about what would happen to you if you lost half of your money right now. Jeff Bezos is not even going to know that he lost half of that money.
No
He's
foreseeable consequences to that.
None. Not one. He will not even, if he woke up with that amount of money missing in the morning, it would take him weeks to notice that it had happened.
Potentially.
Months, years,
if,
never. He
potentially,
may never.
If he wasn't someone who was frequently checking, he would never experience a quality of life issue that would lead him to find this out.
Right. Yes.
If 1/10 of his wealth was all he had left, he would still probably never find out due to his goings and comings.
Yeah. So if you're asking whether we're in favor of redistributing it,
the answer is yes.
Right, right. If you're sitting to yourself thinking, well, wait, are you socialists?
Yes, then the answer is yes.
Sure.
That's, I think, a fair thing to be when you want to live in a society where society is pleasant and not just your life
and
alone in a tower.
3.8 billion
is pleasant.
People are not risking death because of you know,
poverty.
Because of poverty, right?
Right.
Not having clean drinking water.
I don't feel better living in a society where that is the case.
No.
This is society's wealth. We made up the monetary system.
Yeah.
The wealth is all of ours. This is a system that we designed to sort of function as a way for us to not have to barter everything.
Right.
It's not a system that we designed so that some people could hoard all of the resources in society and the rest of us could suffer.
Right.
And I realize society has worked that way for a long time in various respects, but we don't have to decide that that's how it's going to be.
Correct.
Like, I think the mentality of like, oh, we're taking money from these people is problematic because we are not taking something that belongs to Jeff Bezos from him. If we were taking his quality of life from him, that would be a different conversation. What we are taking is resources that he is stockpiling out of our reach that belong to society.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. The monetary system functions so that we can make exchanges with that money, not so that it can be stored in some rich guy's fucking bank account.
Right.
In any case.
That's that.
So if you're asking if
socialism.
I'm a socialist, the answer has been yes for years, but it's still yes.
Right.
It's been yes.
Sometimes you just need a report like this to remind yourself.
Remind yourself that you're a socialist. Yeah, I know. In any case, that's the news this week. We'll be back next week with
more people running for president. Almost guaranteed.
Yeah.
Almost guaranteed.
So true. Yeah. That will likely be our lead story. And potentially at that point, we can also revisit some of our favorite stories from last year, including what the fuck is going on with Puerto Rico.
Oh, yeah.
And a few other things that we, you know, that haven't had weekly reports like we used to do, because there hasn't been weekly news in the same way. But we'll try to revisit some.
I like that.
Some fun.
I'm into it.
Larger stories as well.
Yeah.
All right. Talk to you next week. Bye.